All right, we're going to start on the top of Chaf and Aleph for the two dots. Amar le Rav Papa le Baye. Mishnah Rishonim, Ditrachish Luhu Nisa. What was so good about the earlier generations that they had miracles happen to them? Mishnah Anan, Lomitrachish Lan Nisa. And what's so bad about us that we can't get these miracles take place? Imishum et Nuye. If it's because of the Limud Torah, Shmeid Rav Yehuda, when it came to the years of Rav Yehuda, the generation of Rav Yehuda, Hule et Nuye bin Ezekin Havel. They only learned, say the Nezikin, or they only learned, as Rashi points out of here, it's a slightly different gear, so they only learned the Masechto that had Bavli on them, Vanan Kaimat Nina Neshita Sidre, and we learn all the Shisha Sidre Mishnah. V'chi Avo Mati Rav Yehuda Uksin. When Rav Yehuda used to reach these Mishnayot in Uksin, Haisha Shukveshet Yerek Bikdera, Varmilan, some say Zaitim Shikavshan Bitarfehen Horin, Amar Havayot Ravushmol Kachazinan Hocha. These are like the issues that were dealt with by Rav in Shmuel. Now, Rav Yehuda, as we know, was originally a Talmud of Rav, and then was later on a Talmud of Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel were his Rebbeim. So when he's speaking about the Mishnah, he's speaking about the difficulty of these Mishnayot. The quote in the Gemara is actually, he mentions Uksin here, but one of the Mishnayot, the first one is quoted is from Taharot. The second one is from Uksin. They're both the second parak, the first Mishnah, in both of those Masechtot. The Mishnayot there are speaking about, in the first case, an instance where a woman is putting in vegetables, fruits to pickle them. And then it discusses there the transference of Tumah through the leaves of that vegetable. The second Mishnah talks about Zaitin Shekavshan Bitarfehen, olives that he pickles with their leaves on them. The status of those leaves is Tehorim. And then that Mishnah continues afterwards and says, the reason that they are Tehorim is because they are Lemar'eh. They're just for the way that they look. Rashi claims over here that the Tarfehen, the leaves, once they are pickled, they go bad. And since they go bad, they are no longer what's called a Yad, an extension or a handle for the Zayit. If you learn Mishnayot Uksin, over there we talk about Yad and Shomer, things that extend the object itself and allow Tumah to be passed either from that object to other things or from other things to that object. One of those is a Yad. A Yad is an object or an extension of the item that allows you to carry it. So the leaves, generally, when they're on the olive, you could pick up the olive through the leaves. They become an extension of the olive itself, and therefore if Tumah touches the leaf, it would affect the olive itself. Once you put them in to be pickled, the leaves are going to go bad. After that, when you pull out the leaf, it's not going to be able to hold up the olive. So because of that, it's no longer classified as a yad. That's what Rashi says. Tosafot, on the other hand, argues, and because of the latter half of the Mishnah, which I just mentioned, which is that the Mishnah gives the reason, mipnei amarek, because they're only there for their look. So Tosafot explains that when it comes to these leaves, there are different reasons why you can pickle the leaves. You can put the leaves in to be pickled to show how fresh these olives are because the leaves are still on them, or you can be pickling the leaves in order to make them edible. The leaves are not edible unless you pickle them. So Tosafot says, if you're pickling those leaves in order to make them edible, then you're right. They're not mekabel tumah until they become ochel. When do they become ochel? After they're pickled, they're edible. That's when they become ochel, they'll be mekabel tumah. On the other hand, if you're simply putting them in there for mar'eh, for them to look good or to look fresh because they have the leaves on them, then the leaves serve no purpose, and that's why they are tehorim. So that's what those two Mishnayot are dealing with. And Rav Yehuda is exclaiming or saying about these Mishnayot that they were so difficult to him that they were the equivalent to all the questions that my two Rebbeim used to ask on the Gemara. So then, in our time, when it comes to the Mishnayot of Uksin and the Mishnayot of Teharot, Va'anan kamat ninan b'Uksin Tleisar mitivta. And we have in Masechet Uksin Tleisar mitivta. So the two ways to learn this, Tosafot brings one interpretation, which is that we have 13 Batei Midrashot that are studying Teharot. So over there, Rav Yehuda is having a hard time with Teharot. We have 13 Batei Midrashot that are learning Teharot. Or the other interpretation, which is what Rashi mentions, which is that there are 13 different ways to have the Torah Shebaal Peh expressed. And as Rashi points out, that we have the Mishnah of Rebbe, we have the Breitot of Rabbi Chiya, we have the Mishnah of Bar Kapara or Levi, Tana de Beis Shmuel. We have Davin Batei Midrashot that have Misorot about the Mishnayot, and we have 13 of those different Misorot. The basic point being in each of these cases is that they were very familiar with Teharot, unlike the earlier generation. So that's the comparison in terms of Limud HaTorah. The Limud HaTorah has certainly increased and is of a both greater quantity and maybe even quality. V'ilu Rav Yehuda, ki avi sholif chad misanei atamitru. Speaks about this a lot in Tanit, when we get there to Masechet Tanit, in terms of establishing fast days for rain in Eretz Yisrael. So when they began the fast day, one of the things they did was remove their shoes, because it has a din of a Tanit Zibor, of din of Avelut, like we have on Tisha B'Av. And therefore you have the Chamesha Dinuim, you have to remove their shoes. So as soon as he began to remove his first shoe, at the Mitra it started to rain. That was enough indication of difficulty that they were having that Hashem brought the rain as soon as he started to take off his shoe. We flicked ourselves, scream out to Hashem, late the Mishkach ban, and nobody listens. Nothing happens. We could scream, daven, do anything we want, and nothing changes. So why is it that, despite the increase in Limud HaTorah, despite the plethora of yeshivot, studying Tarot and Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, we're not getting answered by Hashem? The earlier generations used to be Moser Nefesh in order to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Anan lo Masrina Nafshin HaKdushat Hashem. We don't do that. We live the good life. We're not so ready to give up of ourselves in order to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Again, this doesn't mean like the classic or today, the way that Kiddush Hashem is used in terms of someone dying al Kiddush Hashem. But here, Kiddush Hashem means that people were not willing to sacrifice for Kiddush Hashem. Kihadar Ravada Bravo, like this case of Ravada Bravo, the Chazi Lahai Kutit, Dahava Levisha, Karbalato Beshuka. Saw this non-Jewish woman who was wearing a Karbalato Beshuka. Now, number one is that he didn't know she was a non-Jewish woman. The narrative has just explained to us that she was a non-Jewish woman. And number two is the Karbalato. It's unclear what this Karbalato is. We saw earlier in the Masechta the Karbalato of the rooster, which is the crown of the rooster, the red crown. So over here, it could be that it's a begged, it's a red begged. And that's what you can see in the Masechta Tashas he brings down from the Oroch. That's what he believes it was. It was a red beged, which was something that was flashy and was not the proper tzniut for a Bat Yisrael. Rashi brings that Karbalato were very expensive clothing, and others explain that Rashi means that she shouldn't have been walking around with expensive clothing without properly covering it. And the last explanation for Karbalato is that it was actually kilayim, and that would relate it back to the previous Gemara that we spoke about, that someone is wearing kilayim, there's no din of kavod briyot, they have to be pushtan afilu b'shuk. And that's the connection between these two gemarot. Either because karbalota is kilayim, and even if you say that karbalota is not kilayim, we're talking about being mikadesh shem shemayim, and being moser nefesh l'kiddush Hashem. And the previous gemara spoke about the fact that there is ein chokmah ve'ein tevurah ve'ein tzala neged Hashem, that there is no consideration about one's personal comforts when it comes to keeping the mitzvot Hashem. Therefore, one is wearing kilayim, they have to be pushtan b'shuk, even though that may not be kavod abriyot. So then he goes ahead, savar de bat Yisrael, he thought she was a Jewish girl. Kam kare mino. He went ahead and ripped it off of her. So again, either because he thought it was inappropriate type of clothing that she was wearing, or because it was kilayim and it was an isur, or as Rashi says that she was wearing it in such a manner that she wasn't taking care of it, was not presenting it in the proper manner. Iglay milta de kutiti. In the end, it figured out that she was not a Jewish woman, and she was actually non-Jewish. Shemua ba'arba me'azuz. They fined him 400 zuz for his attack, for his inappropriate behavior. Samalei mashmech. So he says to this woman, what's your name? Amalei Matun. My name is Matun. Amalei, they made a play on the words. Matun, Matun. Arba me'azuz shavio. Play on the name Matun, meaning Matan. 200, so Matun, Matun, 200, 200, ends up being that your name is worth 400 zuz. The other possibility Rashi brings down is Matun is to act with a certain amount of restraint. Had I been with more restraint, it would have not cost me 400 zuz. But because I acted brashly, I acted impulsively, therefore it cost me 400 zuz. So the Gemara brings this as an example of a story that Rav Adar Bar Abba was willing to get fined 400 zuz, because he did what he felt was correct here in terms of being Mekadei Shem Shemayim. He didn't think about his own personal wealth. He didn't think about his own considerations. He thought about the Chared Al Devar Hashem, and therefore he acted on that feeling of being Chared Al Devar Hashem, even though it cost him a tremendous amount of money. Okay, now the Gemara moves on and says, Rav Gidol Avarogil Tavaka Azil V'yotiv Asherei Tefila. Rav Gidol used to sit at the entranceway to the Mikvaot. Amalu, hachit filu, hachit filu. As the women came there, he would instruct them about how to perform tvilo properly. He gave them instruction, he gave them halachic indications as what they should do. Samalei rabbanon lo kamistafe mar miyitzahara. Aren't you worried about the yitzahara? You're sitting here outside the women's mikveh. Isn't there a certain amount of yitzahara because you're engaging with the women? Amar, who? He says back to them, damyan bapai kikake chiyure. In my eyes, they're like white geese. They didn't have that effect on him. They didn't have that impact on him because he was engaged in Torah, engaged in the halacha. Rabbi Yochanan Havaragiel Davakazaviyati Vashari Tvila. Similar story is told about Rabbi Yochanan that he used to go sit at the entrance way to the Shari Tvila. Amar Kisalkan Benot Yisrael Vaatin Mitvila. When they come up from their Tvila and Mistaklan be, they'll see me. Benavilu Zara de Shapire Kavati. And as we know, Rabbi Yochanan was very good looking. He was an extremely handsome man. And if the Benot Yisrael, as they leave the mikveh, they look at me, that will impact on them, and then they will have offspring that are as beautiful as me. Samalei Rabbanan Loka Mustafi Mar Me Eina Bisha. Aren't you worried about the Ayin Hara? Amalu Ana Mizara De Yosef Ka Atina. I am a descendant of Yosef. Lo Shalta Be Eina Bisha. That the Ayin Hara has no impact on the Zera of Yosef. So the first thing to ask over here is, why did they ask Rav Gidl about when he said Zayde Sharei Tevila? Aren't you worried about the Eitz Hara? And by Rabbi Yochanan, they only asked him about the Ayin Hara. So we know why by Rabbi Yochanan, they asked him about the Ayin Hara, because he was focused on the beauty, or his own personal beauty, which was the contributing factor to him sitting there and affecting the women. So we know why they asked about the Ayin Hara, but what about the Yetzer Hara? How come they didn't ask that about Rabbi Yochanan? So Bach brings a Gemara story about Rabbi Yochanan, which is not so relevant to our story over here with the son of Rish Lakish, but it said there that he had very long eyelashes. And that it was difficult for him to see through those eyelashes. They used to have to lift him up to see. And so the Gemara doesn't ask about the Yetzer Hara because Rabbi Yochanan really wasn't able to see without any help or outside intervention, and therefore he wasn't looking. So the issue for him was not an issue of Yetzer Hara, it was only an issue of Ayin Hara. Whereas Rav Gidl was instructing the women, and he was engaging in conversation with them in order to instruct them about the halacha, so therefore he was definitely looking directly at them or conversing with them. And that's why the Gemara over there asks about the Yetzer Hara. The second thing is, with regards to Rabbi Yochanan, about seeing Rabbi Yochanan and then having Zari de Shippure, that was a very common belief at the time of the Gemara, through the time of the Rishonim, that what a person looked at had impact on them, both in terms of sickness, choli. We discussed this in our introduction to Masechet Nida, about the fact that many of the Rishonim believe that the choli, quote-unquote, of Nida, impact, if the woman who's a Nida looks at someone, she could have an impact in terms of Choli. And we also discussed there in the Gemara Nida about person who looks at something during the time of Tashmisha Mitah, that has impact on the offspring that is produced. And so Rabbi Yochanan, in subscription to that, says over here that if the Bnot Yisrael, when they're exiting the mikveh, see him, that have also have impact on their offspring, just from seeing him. The other thing you could say or suggest is that seeing Rabbi Yochanan would put them in the right frame of mind of what they should be davening for when they have Tashmisha Mitah. And that we saw earlier by the Tamidei Reino Yona as to regards to which way the bed is placed, north to south. The Tamidei Reino Yona over there said that means what you should daven for, because everything is determined at the point of conception. And if everything is determined at the point of conception, then the tefillot should be in place at that moment so that everything is right. So when they see Rabbi Yochanan, it'll put them in the right framework about what they should be asking in terms of offspring. And therefore, they would ask for Talmidei Chachamim, Bnei Torah, and they would have the right mindset when they were having Tashmisha Mitah. Right, something along those lines. So even with Behemoth there, it's a good example. By the Behemoth of Yaakov Avinu, when he put on the maklot, that the coloring of the maklot had an impact on the outcome of the offspring of those animals. So that also, similar idea that the visualization of the animal would have impact on the offspring that they had. All right. So now, the Gemara talks about this idea that when it comes to the Zera of Yosef, that they don't have a problem with the Ayin Hara, Tichtiv, because it says, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Ale Ayin. Ben Parat Yosef is a fruitful bough or vine that emerges from Yosef, Ben Parat Ale Ayin, a fruitful vine or bough that grows over the spring. So Ram Rabbi Bo, Al Tikre Ale Ayin, those that grow by a spring, Ela Ole Ayin, those that exceed, go above the ayin, mean they're above the ayin hara. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Mar Mihocha, he learns it out of the pasuk from earlier in Parshat Vayechi, where the bracha is given to Yoshnashem Ephraim, which is Vidgu, the rov, Bekervaret. So Vidgu over there, the source of the word is Dagim. So Vidgu, the rov, Bekervaret, is meant you should multiply like the fish. So guys, Mar here makes a play on that, which is Ma Dagim, Shibiyam, Maimichasim Alehem. Just like the fish of the sea, the water covers them over. And therefore the Ayin Hara has no impact on them because they're not visible. So too, by the Zera of Yosef, the Ayin Hara has no impact on them. The eye that did not want to benefit from that which didn't belong to him, meaning Eshet Potifar, Ayin Hara shalat bo. Midah keneged midah, since Yosef did not follow what his eyes saw, and that he withheld and held himself back from engaging with the wife of Potiphar, therefore he is rewarded midah keneged midah, that the ayin hara has no impact on him. All right, now we move on to the next Mishnah. We dealt with the first Mishnah in terms of Ptorim from Kriyat Shema when we're dealing with Meitim, Onain. Now we move on to other Ptorim for Kriyat Shema, which is Nashim, Vavadim, Uktanim, Ptorim mi Kriyat Shema. All of these three in this category are Ptorim mi Kriyat Shema, women, and Avadim. They extend for the same reason. Here we're talking about Avadim, which is an Eved Gnani. They have the same din as a woman, which is that they are Ptorim from Mitzvah Taseh, Shazman Grama. If you have a time-bound positive mitzvah, then they are Ptorim. Kriyat Shema is an example of a time-bound mitzvah, a positive commandment, and therefore Nashim and Avadim are going to be Ptorim. Katan is Ptorim mi Kriyat Shema. That is somewhat of a controversy as to why they are Ptorim from Kriyat Shema. Rashi says over here that the Katan that we're speaking about over here is a Katan shi'egiya lechinuch. It's a Katan that's reached the age where you are obligated to educate him in the mitzvot. Rashi says, then why is he Ptorim? So listen to this line in Rashi. It's a fundamental line in Rashi about Chinuch. This machloka between Rashi and Tosafot actually is more explicit in Sukkah, but Rashi's prinyan is laid out over here very clearly. It's the last two lines in Rashi on this Amud. Tanim. Afilu katan shigil yichinuch, lohi tilu al aviv lechanchol v'kriyat shema. They did not obligate his father to educate him and to have him practice in the mitzvot of kriyat shema. Lefi, she'eno matzui tamid kishimia zman kriyat shema. He is not around when the zman of kriyat shema comes up all the time. He's just not going to be there. It's just not possible for the father to be always be there at Zman Kriyat Shema. So we're not going to obligate the father in Chinuch or the mitzvah of Chinuch in that instance. Now what's very important about Rashi is, who is the mitzvah of Chinuch on? When we say there's a mitzvah of Chinuch, what does that mean? It's obvious that the parents or the father has to teach the child what to do. But the obligation of doing the mitzvah, who does that devolve upon? So here it seems pretty clear that it's the father's obligation to ensure that the child does the mitzvah. And that's Rashi's opinion. That chinuch is actually the obligation of the father. Not the obligation of the child, but obligation of the father. And therefore, if the father cannot be present all the time, we're not going to obligate them in chinuch in that case, because it's not really focused on the child, it's focused on the father. On the other hand, Tosafot believes that when it comes to a child, the mitzvah of chinuch, yes, the father has to teach it, but the obligation devolves upon the child themselves. The child themselves is then obligated in the mitzvah to do the mitzvah. It's not the father's obligation, it's the child's obligation itself. And therefore, the mitzvah is on the child. This has many nafkaminot in halacha, and it's a fundamental machloket in the view of chinuch, whether chinuch is the obligation of the parent, obligation of the father, in terms of the mitzvah, to do this mitzvah of kriyat shema, to do any mitzvah, is the mitzvah the obligation of the father, or is the mitzvah of the child themselves? Rashi here clearly says that it's upon the father. Tosafot here hints at it, but in other places, like in Sukkah, it's much more explicit, that the mitzvah is the child's mitzvah, not the parent's mitzvah. On the other hand, Tosafot, both the Revi and the Rabbeinu Tam disagree. We're talking about here a katan that she igia lechinuch. And we're talking about here, according to both of them, is a katan shelo igia lechinuch. A katan has yet to reach the age of chinuch. Because if it was a katan she igia lechinuch, obviously he should be chayav over here. The only reason he could be patur is because shelo igia lechinuch. And therefore we're talking about a katan over here that's patur mikriyat shema is because he did not reach the age of chinuch. Umina tefillin. And they are also patur min tefillin. Again, tefillin is a mitzvah taseh shazman grama, because we don't put on tefillin at night, we don't put on tefillin on Shabbat v'yom tov. So it's a mitzvah taseh shazman grama, nashim ve'avadim are pturim. Tanim are pturim because we're talking about something that requires careful treatment, watching, tarata guf, all of these things which are a little bit difficult for a katan, and therefore they are pturim in a tefillin. This is also one of the rayot that Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri says that we're talking about here a katan shelo igia lechinuch, that did not reach the age of chinuch, because we know from the Gemara in Masechet Arachin that by tefillin, the zman of chinuch is when he's yachol lishmor aleihem, that when he can watch his tefillin and take care of them properly, then he is chayav in tefillin. So you see again that the katan is chayav in tefillin when it comes to that mitzvah of chinuch. So therefore they both suggest here, the Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam, that we're talking about a katan shelo higia lechinuch. V'chayavin. Now, they are now chayav betfilah and davening, u'b'mezuzah, putting up a mezuzah, u'b'brikat hamazon and benching. So b'nashim v'avadim, we're going to discuss this in the Gemara, why tefillah, mezuzah, and birkat hamazon have a requirement, or the women are chayavin. I just mentioned it in terms of mezuzah. Mezuzah is just a mitzvah asay that does not zman grama. It's a mitzvah asay that is continuous. It's a continuous. A woman is chayevet in that mitzvah. Tefillah and birkat hamazon we'll deal with in the Gemara. As far as a katan in this latter half of the Mishnah, is a katan chayav in these mitzvot? Is a katan chayav in tefillah or not in tefillah? So here's where the Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam differ. The Ri says that the first half of the Mishnah is talking about a katan that has not reached the age of chinuch. The latter half of the Mishnah is talking about a katan that did reach the age of chinuch. And since he reached the age of chinuch, therefore he's chayav. And that's why the katan in the latter half here is chayav. The Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like this because then you have the inconsistency in the Mishnah between the katan in the beginning and katan in the end. The Rabbeinu Tam suggests that all of these cases are katan shelo higia lechinuch. It's just the katan's not shayach in the sefer. The sefer, when we say chayavin, is only referencing the nashim and avadim. It's not referencing the katan at all. All right, so there you have three different ways to look at the Mishnah. You have Rashi saying we're talking about a katan shegia lechinuch, and the problem is here is that the father is the issue here, not the child. We have the Ri and the Bein Otam both saying that it's a katan shelo higia lechinuch, and that's why they are pturim. In the latter half of the Mishnah, where they're chayavim, either you have to say it's a katan shegia lechinuch, or that it's not relevant to the katan. Now the Gemara says Kriyat Shema. We're talking about Kriyat Shema Pshita. Mitzvah Aseh Shazman Shagramahu. What would you think? Why would you have any Havamina that a woman should be Chayevet in Kriyat Shema? It's a time-bound positive mitzvah. Chol Mitzvah Aseh Shazman Graman Nashim Turot. And any mitzvah Aseh that is time-bound, women are exempted from. Tumar says, Ma'udu Teho Vit Ba Malchut Shemayim K'mash Malan. Maybe it's such a fundamental mitzvah of Kabbalat O Malchut Shemayim that it would be beyond the normal framework of mitzvot. It'd be outside of that framework, and it would not be governed by mitzvot aseh shazman graman. Women would be chayavot in that. K'mash malon, that they're not. Okay, minat filin, pshita. Again, it's pretty straightforward, because filin are mitzvot aseh shazman grama, even though that's not pashut, because there are those that believe that they are not mitzvot aseh shazman grama. If you believe that nighttime is zman tefillin, if you believe that Shabbat Yom Tov is zman tefillin, then you could actually have tefillin not be a mitzvot aseh shazman grama. But assuming that it is a time-bound mitzvah, then why would you have any havamina that a woman should be chayavet in this mitzvah? So madu teim hovi tish lemezuzah. In Kriyat Shema, when we say the parsha of Ahavto, there is a juxtaposition between the mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of mezuzah. And we know that mitzvah of mezuzah is not time-bound, and you're chayavet no matter what. So we think that juxtaposition might also be mechayev this woman in the din of tefillin. K'mashmalan, that's not the case, and they remain separate mitzvot, mezuzah being that the woman is chayavet in that, whereas tefillin she is pturah. V'chayavin b'tefillah, and they're obligated to daven. This is a very important gemara. It's a difficult gemara, but a very important gemara. The one says, how come they have to daven? It says, derachmei ninhu. Tefillah is a supplication for mercy. And since it's supplication for mercy, why would you ever think that a woman does not need that? Why would you think that a woman is exempted from that? There's no reason to exempt her. It makes no sense to exempt her. It's all for our own benefit. It's all for our communication and relationship with Hashem. So, of course, a woman should have to daven. The next line in the Gemara, for the remainder of the part, machlok rishonim, whether we are goreset. I'll read it to you, and then I'll explain to you why it's a machlokot. Ma'adu teim, what I've thought, ho'el v'chtiv ba, because it says about filah erev v'voker v'tzahrayim, filin, it says, asicha ve'ema, meaning that I will speak to Hashem, I'll daven to Hashem in these three time periods, k'mitzvah aseh shazman grama dami. It's like a mitzvah aseh shazman grama. And therefore, maybe they should be pturot. K'mash malan. Now here, k'mash malan, you could read one of two ways. K'mash malan, that it is not a mitzvah aseh shazman grama. That's one possibility. Or k'mash malan, despite that fact that it's a mitzvah aseh shazman grama, nevertheless, they are chayavot in this mitzvah. Now, in terms of tefillah not being a mitzvah aseh shazman grama, we know that this is a famous machloka between the Rambam and the Ramban as to whether the mitzvah tefillah is min haTorah or min derabanan. The Ramban believes the mitzvah of tefillah is the Rabbanan, except for exceptional cases where there's an Eitzarah. The Rambam believes that tefillah is a mitzvah b'deoraita. But even the Rambam agrees that if we say tefillah is a mitzvah b'deoraita, it is not the time when you have to daven, and the structure of the tefillah, except for the basic structure of the tefillah, are all midrabbanan. But if you subscribe to that part of the Rambam, that a tefillah is a mitzvah b'deoraita, and it does not time-bound, I mean, there's no time periods where you have to daven. It's just a formal structure of the, has to be shevach, bakasha, and hoda'ah, and that's it, then it would not be a mitzvah aseh shazman grama. And because of that, that's what's the k'mash malan. K'mash malan, that they're a chayavot, because it's not a mitzvah aseh shazman grama. The other k'mash malan could be, again, even though it is a mitzvah aseh shazman grama, nevertheless, they are chayavot, because it's rachmeninu. Rashi says over here, drop this whole part of the girsa. Do not put this in the Gemara. Why? Because the implications from this are that it's a mitzvah aseh shazman grama. That's a terminology that's only used in mitzvah deoraita. And tefillah is not a mitzvah min haTorah. Since tefillah is not a mitzvah Torah, you shouldn't be goreset this whole section over here. On the other hand, Tosafot says, I think you could put the girsa in. What's the problem? He says, we do use this terminology even by mitzvah derabanan. So what's interesting is neither of them suggest that it's a mitzvah d'oraita. They both suggest it's a mitzvah derabanan, just arguing about whether the terminology mitzvah d'aseh shazman germa is relevant to a mitzvah derabanan. All right, so that's interesting in terms of putting this in the girsa or not putting this into the girsa might relate to this issue of whether tefillah is a din d'oraita or tefillah is a din derabanan. Umezuzah. Where it says pshita. Of course you're chayavot in mezuzah. It's a mitzvah d'aseh shalom azman germa. It's not a time-bound positive commandment. Because there's a juxtaposition in Vayayim Shema between Limaratem Otamet B'neichem to the Din Uchtav Tamah Mezuzot Beitecha. Therefore, maybe just like by Talmud Torah, which is not a time-bound mitzvah, women are to rote because it says Limaratem Otamet B'neichem Velo B'notechem, your sons, not your daughters, and therefore they are Pturim from Talmud Torah. So maybe too, by Mezuzah, even though it's not a time-bound mitzvah, there should be a dispensation or they should not be chayavot in it. Kamash Balan, that mezuzah is not governed by the din of Talmud Torah. Why is that? Because the next pasuk after Uchtavtama mezuzot beitecha visharecha is Laman Yerbui Mechem Bimei Vinechem. Why should you do this mitzvah? In order to have a long life. And as Gemara asks rhetorically, Gavra Ba'ichai, Nashi Lo Ba'ichai? Men need a long life, women don't need a long life. So it's clear that women need that same long life. And therefore, they are chayavot in the mitzvah of mezuzah, so that they can attain that same reward of the man yibu mechem bimei vineichem. Right, the next part of the Gemara is ubibirkat hamazon. This next piece of the Gemara is very difficult, because in a second we're going to see the Gemara is not even sure what the chiyuv of birkat hamazon is. The Gemara says right now, pshita. It's simple that they're chayavot in birkat hamazon. Gemara says, ma'u detei moho v'chti b'teit Hashem lechem b'erev basar le'echo v'lechem b'bukra lisboa. That Hashem, when He fed you the man and the slav, He gave you, at night, He gave you the slav, the meat to eat, and the morning He gave you man to eat until you were satisfied. So I would think that since meals have a fixed time, so therefore it's similar to a time-bound mitzvah, that's not the way we look at it. So now, Gemara moves on to something else, and it's going to come back to Birkat HaMazon in a second. Amar Rav Adar Bar Ava, Nashim Chayavot B'Kiddush HaYom Dvar Torah. Min HaTorah, women are chayavot in Kiddush HaYom. Now what that is meant by Kiddush HaYom is very interesting. Min HaTorah, according to most Rishonim, Kiddush HaYom just involves saying something like Yechulu, Mekadesh HaShabbat, whatever it is that accepts and acknowledges the Kedushat HaShabbat, that is what is considered Kiddush Min HaTorah. Kiddush HaYayin is a mitzvah derabanan. To Mekadesh HaYayin is a drush in the Gemara Pesachim of Zachorit Yom HaShabbat HaKodesh Zachrei HaYayin. There are some Rishonim who believe that when it comes to Kiddush HaYayin, that's also d'oraita. What's interesting here is that Rashi actually quotes that drasha. He says, Zachorit Yom HaShabbat HaKodesh Zachrei HaYayin. Remember it on the wine. Seems to indicate that's what Rashi thinks that we're speaking about in the Gemara. Even though, again, according to most, there is no din d'oraita of Kiddush HaYayin. That's only a din d'rabanan. And over here, we're talking about Hayom Dvar Torah. We're talking about being a Torah obligation of Kiddush. So Gemara says, Amai, why are they chayavot in Kiddush HaYom? Mitzvah d'aseh shazman germa. It's a time-bound mitzvah. It has to do with Shabbat. It happens once a week. Only happens at night. It's a time-bound mitzvah. V'chol mitzvot ha'seh shazman german nashim turot. Tamar Abaye midrabanan. Der chayavot midrabanan. Yes, it's a mitzvah d'oraita, but the rabanan were mechayavotah, these women, despite that fact. Tamar Rava v'ad dvar Torah kamar. Doesn't it say here that it's a Torah obligation? V'od. Kol mitzvot ha'seh nechayvinu midrabanan. If that's the case, what's unique about Kiddush? Let the Rabbanan be mechayev women in all mitzvot aseh shazman germa. If you're going to say they're patur midoraita, just say they're chayevot midrabanan. What'd you pick Kiddush for? El Omer Rova, Omer Kra, it's a famous drasha, Zachor, Vishamor. We know it as Zachor, Vishamor, but Dibur Achad Ne'emru, they were said in one word. But as we know that the Aseret HaDibrot that are found in Parshat Yitro use the term Zachor. They said that the Dibrot that are found in Parshat Etchanan use the term Shamor. And so therefore, there's a Hekesh. There's some sort of correlation between the word Zachor and Shamor. Zachor represents the positive commandments of Shabbat. Shamor represents the negative commandments of Shabbat. Kosh yeshno b'shmira, yeshno b'zchira. Anybody who is obligated in the negative commandments of Shabbat is also obligated in the positive commandments of Shabbat. When it comes to negative commandments, we know that a woman is chayevet in all mitzvot ha-Torah. All lota says in the Torah, unless it's not relevant to her, like, for instance, lo takifu pat roshchem, cutting off the peyot or the beard, then they are turot. But otherwise, they are chayavin. Any lo taseh affects a woman as well. So any woman who is affected by the lotase is also going to be affected by the positive commandment. And that's why women are chayavot in Kiddush HaYom in the Torah. Since they're obligated in the negative commandments of Shabbat, they're also obligated in the positive commandments of Shabbat. Just to encapsulate and understand that, the din of a woman being chayavet in Kiddush HaYom in the Torah puts her on the same plane as her husband, which means that a woman could be motzi her husband with Kiddush, or it's just like a husband can motzi his wife in Kiddush, because they have the same level of Chiyuv, they have the same obligation in the Torah in Kiddush. What will change is, for instance, if the husband goes to shul and davens, and then he's yotze already his din of Kiddush deoraita, Kiddush min haTorah, and then he comes home and he's going to make Kiddush for his wife, and he's only obligated midrabanan, and she is obligated min haTorah. In that case, he may not be able to be motzi her. We're going to discuss this in 1 second again when we deal with Birkat HaMazon, and that is because there may not be any arevut. There may not be any joint responsibility of mitzvot between men and women. And because of that, we do not have the principle of Yatsa Motzi, which is that generally we have a principle that even if you completed a mitzvah already, you're able to do that mitzvah and help someone else accomplish mitzvah. So for instance, if you heard the shofar on the morning of Rosh Hashanah, and then later on in the day, someone needs you to blow the shofar for them, you can blow the shofar for them, even though you're no longer obligated in the mitzvah shofar, since you once had an obligation, and you are shayach, or relevant to that mitzvah, you can be motzi them. But that only be true if you have some sort of joint responsibility between us. And we're going to see in a second that may not be so clear when it comes to women. So the solution to that problem is to always make sure that the women on Friday night say some sort of kiddush midoraita. Kivager claims that if you say good Shabbos, that's enough to be Kiddush deoraita. But otherwise, they should just say vayichulu. They should say something that it takes them down a notch from the Kiddush deoraita to Kiddush derabanan. So therefore, the men and women are on the same level of obligation when the man is making Kiddush at home to be motzi the woman. Now the Gemara continues and moves back to the issue of Birkat HaMazon. Amalei Ravina l'Rava, Nashim beBirkat HaMazon deoraita or derabanan. Women, are they chayavot in Birkat HaMazon and benching, min haTorah, or only rabbinically? So now, that goes back to the previous Gemara, which was very difficult. The Gemara before said, pshita, by Birkat HaMazon, that the women are chayavot. Now, all of a sudden, the Gemara is uncertain as to whether the din is a din derabanan or din deoraita. So how could it have been so pshita before that they are chayavot in the midst of Birkat HaMazon? Here, we're not even sure what the obligation is. Is it an obligation min haTorah or an obligation derabanan? So it seems a little strange that we have pshita before and then the girsa over here. So some of the Rishonim have different girsaot here. Lands up in a major machloket Rishonim as to basically how to understand this Gemara and how to reconcile that with the Gemara in Erachin, which speaks about women and Birkat HaMazon as well. Now, just to go back to what is the question of the Gemara here, why would you have a question as to whether a woman is obligated min haTorah or midrabanan in Birkat HaMazon? Rashi claims that the question here revolves around the issue of Al Ha'aretz HaTovah Asher Natanach. The whole premise of benching is that we're thanking Hashem. We're giving Hashem a bracha for the land that he gave us. And therefore, since the women, the nekevot, are not inheritors of the land, they will not have an obligation in benching min haTorah. Rashi raised, what about benot tzlafchad? They did inherit the land. The answer is that they did it al zchut avihem. They got it as a derivative of their father. They didn't get it because of themselves. They got it because their father inherited it, and then they got it from their father. But since they are not relevant to the Nachalat Haaret, maybe you would think that they should not be chayavot in benching. So that's what Rashi says, that the safek here is whether it's derabanan or not. Whereas Tosafot says he doesn't think that makes any sense. Because if what Rashi is correct over here, then Kohanim and Levim should also be Peturim from benching. Because Kohanim and Levim also don't have a parachelik in the Nachalat Haaret. So why shouldn't they be Patur as well? So Eliyesh Lomar, Tosafot says, the time of Mishum Dechtiv al Britcha Shechatamta Bisreinu, in benching in the second bracha, we say that we thank Hashem for the brit that he chatamta bibsereni put in our flesh, which is brit milah, and we thank him for the Torah that he teaches us. These are both mitzvot that are only relevant to men, not to women. And the Gemara is going to say that anybody who doesn't mention these items in Birkat HaMazon is not yotze. So if these items are a part and parcel or primary obligation within benching, and they're not relevant to women, you'd be hard-pressed to say that women should be chayavot in benching min haTorah. So that's what Tosafot claims the question is here. Rashi again claims the question relates to the connection to the land of Israel. So when it says, "Mai nafkamina," what does it make a difference if they're chayavot midrabanan or midoraita? Tlafuke rabbeim yidei chuvatan. Makes a difference as whether they can be motzi other people in benching. Iyamar doraita, if they have a Torah obligation, Ati Doraita, my big Doraita. Then they, since they're obligated mina Torah, can now be Moti someone else, including a man who is Hayav Midoraita from the Torah. But Eliyim Amar, if you say Derabanan, that they're only obligated rabbinically, Havish Enu Mechuyav Badavar, then they're not obligated in the mitzvah. If they're not obligated in the mitzvah, they can't be Motzi Acherim. Anybody who's not obligated in a mitzvah cannot then help someone else be Yotzei that mitzvah. And since her obligation is only rabbinic in level, she cannot help a man on a Doraita level, on a Torah level, be Yotzei the mitzvah. Tamid Rabbeinu Yon raises the issue right now, which is that we're going to have later on in the Gemara. The Gemara says that someone who is obligated mit Rabbanan in benching could be motzi someone who is obligated in Birkat HaMazon min Torah. So we see later on in the Gemara that the Gemara has no problem with someone who's obligated mit Rabbanan being motzi someone who is obligated mit Doraita. So why over here does the Gemara say, well, if the woman's only obligated mit Rabbanan, she can't be motzi someone who has a Torah level obligation? And the answer that's given by the Rosh is that women do not have arvut. They do not have arvut one for the other, meaning that they're not included in this ability to be motzi someone else when you're not obligated in the mitzvah. Arivut makes it that we're all like one joint entity, and there we can help each other out to being doing the mitzvot. The claim of the Rosh, as well as the Dogel Mirvava, the Nodb Yehuda and Shulchan Aruch, is that women are not included in that principle. And therefore there'll be a difference between the Gemara later on where we're dealing with two men. We have two men, even though the one man is obligated only midor Rabbanan, he can be motzi another man midor Raita. Whereas over here, since the women don't have a din of Arivut, they're unable to be motzi and a man who's obligated me deoraita. But again, it has a big nafkamino to la locha in terms of arevut, about the ability of women to be motzi someone else when they do not have that same level of obligation. So Gemara says, my, what's the din here? Tashma, b'emet amru, ben mevarech l'aviv, ve'evet mevarech l'rabo, v'shar mevarech l'bala, son being underage, can say birkat mazon for his father, and eved can say birkat mazon for his master, and a woman can say Birkat HaMazon for her husband. Person should be cursed if that's how he conducts himself, meaning that the person's not educated enough that he can't say his own Birkat HaMazon, and he's having his child or his wife say the Birkat HaMazon for him. That's a sad state of affairs, and therefore he should be cursed. So, if you say that they're obligated in a Torah, you can understand what's transpiring over here. If you're saying it's Ati Rabbana Mekvi Doraita, if she's only obligated to Rabbana, how could she be Motzi the husband Doraita? The Gemara says, Lutamech, according to your reason, Katan Bar Chiyuvo? What are you going to do with Katan? That solves your problem of a woman for her husband. So if you say they're both Doraita, that takes care of it. But what about a Katan? Katan's never going to be obligated to Doraita in Birka Mazon. So how do you deal with that issue? El Hoch of my skin and Gonja Chal Shura Dirbanan. The man only ate a rabbinic amount, which will obligate him in Birkat HaMazon, Da'ati Rabbanan, or maybe Rabbanan. Therefore, you're dealing only on a rabbinic level. And a person who's obligated me to Rabbanan can also be Motzi another person. So a Katan who's obligated me to Rabbanan can be Motzi his father, who ate less than the shear that would make him Chayiv me to Raita. And same with a woman. She's only obligated me to Rabbanan. She can be Motzi her husband, who is only obligated me to Rabbanan. We'll see later on in the Gemara, it's a machloket, because the Pasuk says, V'achalta, V'savato, V'rachta, D'Shem Lokecha. That you have to eat, be satisfied, and then say Birkat HaMazon. So the obligation of Birkat HaMazon derives from Visavata. You have to be satisfied. Chalukah later on the Gemara, if that's a kibetz or kazayit, how much that is. But if he ate less than that amount, he's not obligated in a Torah to bench. It's only a rabbinic obligation to bench with less than that shiur. And that's the situation over here. And you can't prove anything from this Braita, because this Braita can either be on a Torah level or a rabbinic level, and we can come up with a way to explain the Braita in both instances. Shadarsh Rav Avira Zimnen Amar Lami Shmei de Ravi Ami. Avira was Doresh. Sometimes he said in the name of Ravi Ami, Zimna Amar Lami Shmei de Rav Asi. Sometimes he said in the name of Rav Asi. Amru Malachei Ashreit Lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's a Gemara that we saw towards the end of Nidah as well, that the angels came to Hashem. Ribono Shalem Katu B'Torah, it says in your Torah, Shelo Yisapanim V'lo Yikach Shochad, that you will not favor anybody and you will not accept bribery. V'lo Atano Sepanim L'Yisrael, don't you favor B'nei Yisrael? Don't you treat them differently? So Dichtevi Sa'ashem Panav Elecha, same Lecha Shalom. So it sounds over there that Yisai Hashem Panav Elecha, Hashem will turn his face to you. Now again, we mentioned this in Nida, Tosafot in Nida mentions this as well. The Pashtura Pasuk of Yisai Hashem Panav Elecha is not saying that Hashem favors you, but rather that Hashem should find favor, that we should find favor in Hashem's eyes. So the usage of the term is not the same, but it's clear here the Gemara is reading it as that Hashem favors B'nai Yisrael. So Amalehem, V'chilo Asip Panim L'Yisrael, how could I not treat B'nai Yisrael in such a manner? Shekatavti lehem b'Torah, because I commanded them in Torah, v'chalta v'savato v'rachta d'Hashem lokecha, that I said the obligation for benching only comes when you're satisfied, v'hem medaktikim al etzman, and they are particular themselves, ad kazayit vad kabetza, depending on which opinion you think is misavata, that they bench even if they eat less than a kazayit, or even if they ate less than a kabetza, they haven't reached the point of savata, they still bench, because they go lifnim ishut adin. So it's a mita keneged mita. We, B'nai Yisrael, act lifnim ishut adin, and accept upon ourselves obligations that are not bina Torah, to do even more than what the Torah says. So Tu Hashem says, I have to be nosip panim, I have to favor them, I have to go lifnim ishut adin, and treat them differently, and give them the benefit of their actions towards me. Okay, I'm going to stop over here. The next Mishnah begins the sugya of Balkeri, which really carries through to the next daf. All right, so we'll stop over here.